This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynnBET.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGPN on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. That's PropSwap.com, promo code SGP. And we're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Sign up at UnderdogFantasy.com with promo code SGPN and receive a free $25 entry to use in the Best Ball Mania 2 contest for a chance to win $1 million. That's UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And while you're at it, make sure to download the SGPN app in the App Store or the Google Play Store. We've got all kinds of great things in there, including our podcasts, news, picks, all right in the palm of your hand, along with so much more. So make sure to download it wherever it is you download apps.
Hi ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 58, and I'm going to go back to the Montreal Expo theme. This is going out to five-time All-Star, three-time Gold Glover, two-time Silver Slugger, Tim Wallach, who wore number 58 in his rookie season on the Montreal Expos, and he's one of the guys we used to watch when we would go as kids to Montreal in the summer vacations and go to Expo games for like $2. So yeah, good times. Now I'm going to break my rule. I'm going to let my co-host speak briefly because I'm going to address him here. Co-host who's a baseball nut, do you know who Tim Wallach is?
I don't, although the name does sound vaguely familiar. The Expos weren't around all that often. I'm going to date myself here. During my fandom, like during my young fandom they were, but they were pretty bad.
Yes.
Because like when they, I mean, like they were about to win the NL East right in 94 when the strike happened. I was four or just about to turn five when they started the strike. So, and then they, I mean, what did they stop? When did they move to Washington?
I can't remember. It's bad memories of.
Yeah. They're talking about giving you guys the A's though.
It's true.
Yeah.
They're talking about the A's back.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, it's nowhere close to where I live, but still, we did used to go there often on vacation. So, okay, shut up. You're not allowed to talk anymore until I introduce you now. Bringing up bad memories. I haven't introduced myself. I'm Jeff Fox, your host of this here podcast. And if you haven't been able to tell yet, I'm extra salty on this episode. I warned everyone on Twitter last night I'm going to be extra salty because I'm full of rightful indignation because we got screwed last night by the judges, and we're going to go through that. And I think my co-host is equally as upset because he got screwed too, because he had almost all the same picks as I did, except for the one where I got it right and he got it wrong, of course. But more of that in a moment. So, yes, in jokes, I run the MMA-manifesto.com. No, not MMA, just MMA-manifesto.com. You'll find the site. That's my MMA-exclusive site where you got contests, you got fighter salary earning info, you got schedule reports, you got fight cards, you got all the stuff you need on there. And I also obviously work for the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, where I am an editor, writer, all that stuff. And I'm a host of this podcast here. Episode 58, told you that. Tim Wallach, I told you that. What else? I'm acting like I have notes, which I do not. We do not plan in advance in this podcast. That's why it's so good. Everything's off the cuff. If you are listening to us on the SGPN feed, if you can find our exclusive feed, MMA Gambling Podcast, and subscribe to that, that would be appreciated because eventually we're going to be farmed out totally onto that that feed only, and we don't want you missing this amazing, amazing podcast, which your week is not complete without us twice a week. So enough of me rambling. I think I'm struggling here more than usual. Let's let my co-host, Sosco, speak again. His name is Daniel Gumby Vreeland. What can I tell you about him? Let me think. He told me really a lot of interesting stuff. He tells me the most interesting stuff off air, but about his gambling and and other habits, but he doesn't let that out of the bag. So I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag about that. But he is a degen. Don't you worry. He is a degen. He hosts the what does he host? Prelim Primer podcast. He hosts the Top Turtle MMA podcast. He associate hosts this. Sometimes I even let him take over and drive when I'm on vacation. He writes for me at the MMA-manifesto.com. He writes for sportsgamblingpodcast.com. He writes for a couple of other places that don't pay me any money, so I'm not going to mention anything about them. And he's the baddest purple belt around. He's Daniel, like I said, Gumby Vreeland. Hello, Mr. Vreeland. Are you indignant like I am? Are you full of righteous anger and rage after last night's screwing?
I will say I'm more mad. There's like a tier of madness depending on which fights we're talking about.
Yes.
And there's like a full spectrum of anger in there.
Yes.
Whereas some I'm really angry about. Some I'm like, I guess I could kind of see that even though I don't like it. And then there's some that I'm like, I really have no reason to complain.
Yeah, it's true. There really probably was only one quote-unquote robbery.
There was one that was undefensible.
Yes.
Completely indefensible in every single way.
Oh, listen to this guy. Whoa. Listen, he's ready to roll. I better hurry up and get to the car breakdown. This guy is raging. And then there were some questionable ones, obviously. Plus, like, the two people Dan hates were on the winning side of
two of them.
They're on the winning side of a couple of those questionable decisions. I know hate's a strong word, but I think he hates them.
That's not true. I think I probably hate Greg Hardy.
That's true, yeah.
But I don't think I, like, hate any fighters just based on their, like, personalities. I think maybe Dillashaw fits in there, though, because he's EPO. That's, like, that could ruin somebody's career that you're fighting against, and it's really dirty. So, like, I might hate that. But, like, the other one we're going to talk about, I dislike, I find annoying, but hate's a strong word for anybody that's not Greg Hardy.
In my former life, I had a contractor of mine told one of my coworkers that he hates me and the coworker. So that's kind of hates a strong word. And he said, I know. So there you go. So not much has changed with me. I am what you see on this podcast. So, all right, before we get into this, cause I don't think I can hold Dan back much more. He's ready. He's ready to unleash the fury here. Let me tell you about WynnBET. WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Join us. Promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today and you'll receive a special offer up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. People who did their job properly wouldn't hate me, though. They love me. But people who don't do their job properly, they had a problem with me. So I don't have a problem with that. So anyhow, moving on, we're talking about UFC and ESPN, Sanhagen versus Dillashaw, UFC Vegas 32. There was actually an attendance listed here. It was 51 people there last night, Dan, and I think they all were Randy Costa's friends and family, it sounded like, when he did you hear the roar when he came down?
I will just say people from Massachusetts tend to be quite loud. So, that's maybe not all that surprising.
It's true. You used to share your jiu-jitsu videos with me. I remember someone yelling, come on, Dan, the whole time. So that's right. Whoever was recording it would yell, come on, Dan.
Yeah,
you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I'm pretty sure that was my brother's wife because she used to take some, and once in a while she would sit in the coach's chair, like if I didn't have a coach come, and just nice. Yell. She would just yell the opposite of what the other coach would say. So if he was like, get your leg out of there. She would like, hang on to his leg.
Nice. Well, that's better than what? Better than that Ronda Rousey coach, right?
Head movement.
yeah. Better than a lot of things here in coaches' corners. You hear a lot of like, get up, get down, get out of that. Like general, like not very helpful stuff. Like what Uriah Faber last night said, try to hit her.
Yeah, keep hitting her in the face.
Yeah, he said to the fighter who we will not mention because Dan will blow his top so we better hurry up and get to that fight. It's a little ways down the card. All right, so yeah, 51 people, and like I said, they all were Randy Costa fans. Bonus awards, Holly and Pava, Well, I can't remember how to say his name.
Paiva.
Paiva, right. It's Paiva. It's like Rocky Paiva. Raleigh and Paiva and Kyler Phillips were fight of the night. There was a lot of options for fight of the night last night. Main event, that fight, there was a lot. So that
Costa,
was a
well, Costa Yanez could have won that too.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That was well earned $50,000 for them. And then the Greek freak Adrian that's a joke for a different guy, I think. Adrian Yanez won. He got the $50,000 for performance of the night, and Darren Elkins got $50,000 for his performance. Yanez, that is my joke. The Greek freak, Adrian Yanez, Antetokounmpo. Yeah, that's right. I remember, yeah, Yanez Antetokounmpo. So now I hate both of them. I hate Antetokounmpo because he beat the Suns, and now I hate Adrian Yanez because he beat Randy Costa. So
we're a podcast of tangents, so I'm going to allow myself to go on one here. You can definitely hate Yanez for...
No, I don't hate him.
Well, you can dislike him for taking a title away from your Phoenix Suns. But yes. I will also say this. How much did you enjoy the video, if you have seen it yet, of him trying to both order, first of all, 50 chicken nuggets from Chick-fil-A and trying to somehow coax free Chick-fil-A out for life out of winning an NBA Finals? Like, that's the first thing he thought of is, can I parlay this into getting free chicken for life?
how many hundreds of millions of dollars does he make? No, I've totally shut down. I didn't think I cared as much, because now that I'm older, I thought I cared more when they lost in 93, but I think I do care that they lost, because I'm totally I ignore all NBA news I see now, and I don't watch or listen to it, but I did hear that. So
yeah, he's being pretty funny. I'm enjoying his run with the trophies.
Yes. Whatever. Why do we have to talk about that, Dan?
I said we're a podcast of tangents, and I don't want to talk about TJ Dillashaw winning a fight.
Okay.
I haven't had to talk about this for 2.5 years.
That's true. All right. Well, how about since we're trying to kill time before we talk about TJ Dillashaw, let's talk about Prop Swap, because the Phoenix Suns part of Prop Swap, that part of the ad is out now, I see. So I can read this ad and not feel – any pain in my heart. So PropSwap, we are brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Football season is about to kick off, and PropSwap is here to make this your best season ever. With PropSwap, your bet doesn't need to win in order to make money. It just needs to improve. For example, the Atlanta Falcons are 80-1 to win the Super Bowl and have one of the easiest strength of schedules in the league. If you think they'll get off to a hot start, make that 80-1 bet before the season and then sell for a big profit after only a couple weeks. That's actually a good idea. The average seller on PropSwap makes over $500 per month just listing and selling tickets. And when making your bets, remember to go for two. Make two tickets on the same team so you can sell one for a profit and keep one to leave yourself some skin in the game. Get started today by going to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. PropSwap, it's where America buys and sells sports bets. See, no, I have no affiliation with the Atlanta Falcons, so that does not bother me one bit. TJ Dillashaw winning bothers me because he's, I call him a lovable scamp, but we can take the lovable part out of that probably. He's a scamp. I believe he's a snake, too, according to someone who would know about snakes, Conor McGregor, years ago. I believe that was the word, right? That was on The Ultimate Fighter, so I don't know for sure. I believe he called him a snake.
Snake in the grass.
Snake in the grass, like Dusty Rhodes used to say. He used to call Ric Flair a snake in the grass, I think. So that old snake in the grass, TJ Dillashaw, won a contested decision, a split decision. I hate split decisions. Every time I hear Bruce Buffer say a referee, one of the judges' names, I know a split decision's coming, and I cringe because you never know what you're going to get with split decisions. Anyhow, he won a split decision, 47-48, 48-47, 48-47. So basically he won 3 rounds to 2, 3 rounds to 2, and someone had Sam Hagen winning 3 rounds to 2. It's hard to say if I'm biased because I want Sam Hagen to win just because I picked him. Plus, no one likes TJ. I was going to say I don't like TJ Dillashaw, but no one liked TJ Dillashaw. I can't even say his name now. But I think I had said he can win in 3 rounds to 2. Same with you, Dan?
Yeah, I had him in real time. I haven't gone back and watched. Yeah, I haven't gone back and watched it. But I watched live. I thought he won 2, 4, and 5.
I actually thought 1, possibly 2.
Yeah, I thought one was close, but I gave it a Dillashaw. And also, like, I usually check myself against, like, two or three Twitter accounts that I trust their scoring. Like, Sean Sheehan, I usually look to see what he says. Yep. There's a guy named
Podgot.
Yeah, he's really good at judging fights because he's all about the criteria and stuff. There's a guy who goes by Fight _ Expert. I believe his real name is Dusty Andrews.
I think it might be a she, actually, to tell you the truth.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, maybe so, but whoever Fight _ Expert is, that person, scorecards are usually right around where the judges' scorecards are. So when I saw a bunch of people, you know, I was, like, leaning Dillashaw after the first, and I was like, then I looked, and pretty much everybody said Dillashaw in the first. And I was like, okay, so, you know, anything I did think about Sanhagen in first was an overreaction. But, like, I think 2, 4, and 5 have got to be his, unless you're scoring pressure. And the thing is the criteria for judging, for those who are not super familiar with it, pressure in controlling where the fight is does not matter unless all of the grappling and all of the striking that you scored is deemed 100% tied. So if the striking is even just a little bit in somebody's favor, pressure does not, you know, like, change who's in favor. Pressure is on the back burner. You do not even touch it unless everything is exactly tied. Then you can talk about pressure and control where the fight is. So for me in 4 and 5, that's all that Dillashaw had going for him, right? Like, he lost a lot. Like, he just got his grappling basically nullified, so there was no grappling. And
yeah, there wasn't anything. Yeah,
all of the striking was in Sanhagen's favor, in my opinion, in those rounds.
Other than light leg kicks, like, he was kicking him, but he wasn't kicking him hard. And Dillashaw was snapping his head back with jabs pretty much every round, pretty much.
Yeah, and not just jabs, like spinning back fists, even with a couple hard elbows. Like, yeah, like, he hit him with a bunch of stuff that I think, you know, did legitimate damage. And not that those leg kicks didn't. Like, I think, while you say light leg kicks, I give him a little more credit on that. I think that he did probably, you know, do some damage actually with those leg kicks, but not more than Sanhagen did. So, yeah, I gave Sanhagen 2, 4, and 5. And you know what's the funny thing, too, is if you look at how the judges scored the fight, you know, 2 out of 3 judges gave him 4 and 5.
Yeah.
You know,
and all of them gave him 2.
And all of them gave him 2. So the majority of judges gave him 2. The majority of the judges gave him 4. The majority of the judges gave him 5. But that's just not how we score fights.
No.
Instead, we score them totally. And, you know, one of those judges who gave him 5 didn't give him 4. One of the judges who gave him 4 didn't give him 5. And we have to see this unfortunate TJ Dillashaw run back to the top now.
Yeah, but other than the bank account, I would rather be Corey Sanhagen today other than TJ Dillashaw, because his eye got messed up. Sanhagen pretty much came out of it without a scratch. I'm sure his legs probably are beat up, but he didn't look like he had really any wear in his face at all.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too, is, like, not that damage is, like, a good indicator, right? Because, like, just, like, look at Nate Diaz the wrong way, he starts bleeding, or, like, if you...
Darren Elkins.
Yeah, Darren Elkins comes into the cage bleeding, so, I kind of think damage is not a good indicator, but, I mean, like, in this case, it did show a lot, you know what I mean? Like, it was a good indicator of who was actually landing big shots, because, you're right, TJ didn't land anything that was, like, big upstairs on Corey Sanhagen, you know, like, a couple of things to the body, a couple of things to the legs, and, like, yeah, apart from that, I'm pretty positive that Corey Sanhagen did more damage.
And he never was, I never thought he was in risk of losing at any point, other than, obviously, via judges, while, on the other hand, Sanhagen had Dillashaw in trouble a few times in the fight, so that's another thing.
I was a little bit worried that a couple of those times he was going to give up his back in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
That's somersaulting.
He's a squirming dude, man.
Yeah, dude. That was – I would say that was one of the more impressive pieces because, like, if you go back and look at that Aljamain Sterling fight where he just gets bulldozed, right? And he's come out and said – like, I interviewed him after that fight, and he told me
Then that's why he lost. Damn it.
Yeah. I've interviewed him.
Why didn't?
Yeah. But when I talked to him after the Aljamain Sterling loss, he knocked out Frankie Edgar after I interviewed him. So you know, nothing. No knocking here. But he said that he felt flat in that fight with Sterling, and he felt like he couldn't, like his muscles didn't move right. But like, this was such a better showing of, like, I'm in a bad position, I need to move. Whereas in the Aljamain Sterling fight, it was like, I'm in a bad position, and then he just froze. So like, this was I think it was technique-wise a step forward for Corey Sandhagen. Like, I think he looked better than in most of his fights.
Yeah. And on the flip side, things we were worried about, not worried about, hoping, because we bet against him. For Dillashaw, we were hoping he, you know, physically would not be the same fighter with all the time off, his advanced age for a bantamweight, and not being on EPO, which helps your cardio and your lung capacity and everything. Unless he pops for a test anytime soon, it looks like he passed basically all those tests with flying cover. Oh, his chin also we were worried about, and he pretty much passed all those tests with flying colors. He got rocked a few times, but he held up fine. Didn't slow down as the fight went on, really. And don't you dare interrupt me. And now I don't remember what I was going to say, Dan. Go ahead. Talk.
Well, I was going to throw a wrench into your third point, because your 3 points were good cardio, good chin, and physically the same fighter. I'm going to challenge the physically the same fighter. Because give me this. If you saw this TJ Dillashaw, the one who went out there and had, like, that close split decision loss to Dominic Cruz and then knocked out Cody Garbrandt, would you expect him to go, what did he go, 2 of 15 in takedowns?
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
Like, he looked, and I don't know that it was a technique issue.
Yep.
But, like, he, you know, 2.5 years ago, TJ Dillashaw takes Corey Sandhagen down 8 out of 15 times instead of 2. And I think that was a notable change.
Yep, very good point. As usual, Dan comes through with notable points and
always
makes me look like a fool. Hey, I didn't mention how we did with our picks, but let's finish breaking this one down. Now that you've showed me up, I'm going to show you up. Barely show you up, but I will. All right, so I'm looking at, I'd run performance-based rankings on MMA-manifesto.com based on who a fighter, basically like performance based, not voting or anything like that. So I base it on who a fighter beat, what that fighter's record was at the time, and if they finished them, if it was a title fight, they get bonus points for stuff like that. And more recent the fight, the better. Fight, you get points for their most recent performance and for a performance a few years ago, that type of thing. So anyhow, we still basically have, there's basically four guys near the top, and there's a huge gap. We got Aljamain Sterling is at the very top, but really, he's getting credited for that disqualification title win. He's getting a lot of points for that because it was a win in a title fight. Then we got TJ Dillashaw right in his heels now, even though he's only got, what, 6 fights that qualify for this. So he's right up there. Then we have a huge gap. Then we're going to have Peter Yan, who's the uncrowned champ, and then Corey Sandhagen, and another huge gap, and then Song Yadong and Rob Font, and then another huge gap. And then, you know, that's basically how the rankings play out. Long way. It was a long way of me asking you, what do you think is next for both these guys?
So I would say this coming out the gates. I think they're going to give TJ Dillashaw a title shot. I'm pretty positive that that's what they want to do, because that's why they booked him in this fight, right? Is that,
right,
like, Corey Sandhagen is not the most marketable fighter on the planet. You know, you could have put him against Jose Aldo and let him beat the hell out of Jose Aldo, but they wanted him to be able to prove that he actually deserves a title shot. And I think this is the fight that does it. Now, here's the thing about that, though, is, first of all, Jan and Aljo are fighting in October. Who knows what the layoff is after that? Depending on how Jan beats Aljamain, which I kind of – I mean, no offense. I love Aljamain Sterling. I'm a big Aljamain Sterling fan. I've been a fan of his. As a matter of fact, you can go back and read my issue of Fight Magazine that I used to write for.
Who got you into there? Fight Magazine. How'd you write there?
I don't know. I must have got recommended by somebody nice. But my first article there was talking about how, like, Aljamain Sterling was like the future. And like, so I've been a big fan of his for a long time. Peter Yan is gonna kill him.
Those foot sweeps killing him. He already did kill him, basically.
Yeah, those foot sweeps are ridiculous. But like, if for some reason he goes in there and has like a weird back and forth fight where like Jan wins a split decision, it's not out of the question to put them roll that back a third time. Like, I know that nobody's going to be like crazy on board for it, but I could see them doing Petr Yan versus Aljamain Sterling 3 sometime in March of 2022 or some shit like that. Like, and if that's the case, we're talking about damn near a year off for Dillashaw after having 2 years off. Like, that's a long time for him to be off again. I would say this, depending on how that all shakes out and what that looks like, I'd actually like to see him fight Rob Font. I think that that's a good fight. It lets us know if Rob Font's the real deal or not, because obviously he's coming off of a very nice win. But, like, you know, like the caliber of Rob Font's wins, maybe a step behind a Dillashaw or a Corey Sandhagen even. And, like, well, I guess him and Sandhagen have pretty similar ones. But, like, yeah, I'd like to see him fight Rob Font. As for Sandhagen, man, I think he's in a weird spot with he's got wins. If you look at the official UFC rankings, he's got wins over number 6 and number 7. So, like, he can't fall that far down because he's got right. wins over those guys already. I'm thinking maybe Jose Aldo, right? Like,
that'd be fun, yeah.
Or Cody Garbrandt off a loss, maybe? Cody Garbrandt makes sense, too, if he's not yep. dropping to flyweight. You know, anybody lower than that seems kind of crazy. Like, he shouldn't be fighting guys like Dominic Cruz or anything like that. Like, he's above that. Yeah, so I'd say Jose Aldo or Cody Garbrandt for him, but cool. Anybody's fun with a Corey Sandhagen fight.
Yeah, I think he came out looking the best last night, despite losing. His face definitely came out looking the best last night. We spent a lot of time in the main event because that basically was the, when it comes to top of the weight class type stuff, that was ended up being the only real meaningful fight we had on the card last night because we lost the co-main event when Macy Chaisson had a back out of her fight. She had stress fracture in her foot. So she had to back out of her fight with Aspen Ladd, which was one of the fights we were most looking forward to, unfortunately. But so the card that was looking super strong ended up being a little less stacked than we were hoping. So that's why we can give a lot of shine to TJ Dillashaw, who we dislike along with everyone else. So, all right, as for the actual results, we were mediocre, just as we tend to promise you people. We bring you mediocre results, and we were right. We danced, both of us danced around mediocre. With the odd number of fights, there's no way we could have been 50-50, so we did perfect. I was 6-5, you were 5-6. You can't get more mediocre than that. I was right on the money. I was up $22, Dan was down 169. So on the year, Dan, all your talk about how much who's down the least amount of money, you're only down $10 less than me now. So you're going to have to find a new excuse after next week, I think, because I am going to take the lead in that category too.
I don't think so, because we've got a big 15-fight card coming up. And I will tell you this, the days I feel the best are when we have really big cards. So
it's a really bad card too.
I was just looking at it like, oh, I don't think so.
Nerds, it's not.
I'm going to debate you on that one because the prospects on this one. You mean to tell me that you don't like Melsik Bogdasarian?
There's some amazing names on here, too.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait for you to try to talk your way through that.
I'm not even going to try to plan in advance. That's per usual. But yeah, no one's going to watch. No one is going to watch this card next week, I mean, or the week coming up. But we'll get to that at the end of the podcast. So, 6-5, 5-6. So I'm going to say I'm on a heater now. That's 15-6 over 2 weeks, and that's what 22-11. So that's like 67%. I think that constitutes a heater, don't you?
It's a warmer, maybe. We can call it a warmer.
Oh, fine. Better than you, sucker. You're 13-8 over 2 and 18-15 over 3. So
not great.
To you. Great. On the year, I'm up 56% for me, 52% for Dan. We both lost our locks, which was super annoying. I got robbed of mine, and we'll get to Dan's fight, but yeah. But Dan didn't get robbed in his. Person that was fighting that person all of a sudden knows how to box is what happened there. So I'm still up. I'm 11-6 on my locks. Dan's 8-10. I'm up money. Dan's down a whole lot of money. So that's per usual. Listen to me, not Dan. But you all know that already. All right. Want to move on. The bumped up to the co-main event was Holian Paiva versus Kyler Phillips, the ultimate bro, Kyler Phillips. Good fight. Actually, it won fight of the night, did it not? Yes, it did. So, yeah, it was a good fight. Paiva's strength and definitely transferred up from flyweight to bantamweight. He had no trouble in there, especially with the grappling and whatnot. He looked very good. Phillips didn't look bad himself, but we got that's actually quite a big underdog, too. I think Phillips was in the minus 200, so Paiva, minus 280 he was. So Paiva got some people some good money if they bet on him. What do you think of that fight? Good fight, obviously, because it won fight of the night on a crazy fight night.
Yeah, I would say it was a really good fight. This is the one I was probably the most medium upset with. So the Sandhagen-Dillashaw one, I get it. Like, if you just scored the fourth or the fifth for Dillashaw, they were close enough. And two judges, you know, each gave him one of those two, and that was enough. Yeah. This one, I have a... So again, medium upset about this one, probably because I don't, like, love Kyler Phillips, like I love Corey Sandhagen. I don't hate Holian Paiva.
You sound a little more. You sound a little more than medium. It sounds like you're about to explode a second ago. I think you're angry. And Kyler Phillips is a friend of the Top Turtle podcast. So how dare you?
Yeah, I mean, I do like how his style, but like, there's really. I'll be real honest. There's no way you can't give him a 10-8 first round. If there were three more seconds in that first round, that ref would have stopped that fight.
Sal D'Amato agrees with you, but that's it. Only Sal D'Amato agreed with you. The other two judges did not.
And we're going to talk about how Sal D'Amato is a moron a little bit later in the show because he scored the fight for TJ Dillashaw and another fighter who shall not be named. Sal D'Amato's an idiot. But like,
wow.
That's
I told you you were angry.
That's clearly a 10-8 for Kyler Phillips, right? Like, in a way that, like, I don't know how anybody gives a 10-8 if that ain't it, right? Like, because not only did he have that, like, near stoppage at the end, he threw one of the meanest elbows that dropped Paiva earlier in that round, and I just don't understand how that doesn't wind up a draw. And on top of that, if it wasn't going to be a draw, I actually think the second round was really close, too. I could have seen giving the second round to Kyler Phillips.
Yeah, most people seem to – sorry, I keep interrupting today, but I have things to say, damn it. Most people, people being media, if you want to consider us media people, most of them are picking this fight a draw. One person picked it for Paiva via, and one looked it for Phillips. So we're basically draw territory, which is – I agree with you. It's what it should have been. But I think we still have it to where Sarah plus Jordan contending around is –
yeah, and that's silly to me. Also, when I was looking at the media scores, and the person who had it for Phillips didn't even have it the right way for Phillips, right? Like, he still does. If you scored that fight for Phillips, it ought to be 29-27.
Yeah, right? That's true.
Because he got 10-8 first, and maybe edged out the second, right? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you said he edged out the second, but, like, he got a 10-8 first. And, yeah, so, like, I scored it a draw. I expected it to be a draw. Yeah, that's just it's just another bad decision, and for a card to be topped by two decisions that I didn't agree with, and three out of five on the main card with literally the only two that I didn't contest were TKOs. So it's upsetting. I will say I do think despite the fact that I think this was a draw, I'm definitely lower on Kyler Phillips than I was before, though.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. He's fighting a flyweight, and he got manhandled for a lot of the fight.
Yeah, and I would also say this, too. Like, he went for the finish in the first and just looked out of it in the second and third. Like, not that he was out of the fight in those two rounds, but, like, he didn't look like Kyler Phillips anymore. His wrestling also didn't hold up. Like, in the preview show, I talked a lot about how I was, like, high on his wrestling, and I think it's better than people give him credit for, especially the way he dealt with Song Yadong. But, like, yeah, it didn't hold up very well against Paiva. So either I underestimated Paiva or, Phillips, round two and three gave me some things to think about for sure.
Yeah, maybe one of the UFC off weeks we'll have to have a whole – bitching about judging podcasts. It's still really dumb how the sport is judged. It's still like with boxing rules, 10-9 rounds and judging it per round is like, imagine other sports judging it like per quarter or per period or whatever. It's ridiculous. So you'd have the wrong team winning all the time. If you were like an NBA team, you know, squeaks by for three quarters, they win, say they win by 1 point the first three quarters, and then the other team wins by what, 5 points in the last quarter. In the real world, the team B would win, but no, in MMA, team B would have lost 3-1. So it's a strange way to judge a sport. So anyhow, third fight, we did not need judges. It went right. This basically went the way we were predicting it would go. Darren Elkins TKO Derek Minor. We were thinking it could have been a submission win, but a gritty fight. Darren Elkins is impossible to finish, impossible to keep down, just keeps going. He got a very, very impressive win over an up-and-coming guy.
It was the second most Darren Elkins fight that Darren Elkins has ever been in, only behind the Mirsad Bechdik fight, where he took the most savage beating for 14 and a half minutes before knocking out Bechdik. But this was right on par with that. While he was getting the snot beat out of him in the first round, I turned to my wife and I was like, Elkins has got him right where he wants him.
Yep, he's just wearing his fist out.
Yeah, because, and I will say this too, was that not one of the most savage elbows that Minner landed on Elkins in that first round too? How did he not get knocked out? And granted, I shouldn't be surprised that Elkins didn't get knocked out, but like, he bounced his head off the mat with that elbow in, like, one of the most vicious ways. And Elkins just, like, quietly shifted his hips and pulled into guard. And I was like, what the hell is that, dude?
It's eventually, it's going to catch up to him. He's 37, and that's, what, 35 pro fights? So eventually it'll catch up to him.
But how is it not caught up to him, though?
I know.
Like, you know, like, and he's been knocked out 3 times in his career, which I don't even, like, the Ricardo Lamas one, I guess, is the only one that's super recent, and then all the other ones, you gotta go back, you know, 7 or 8 years before you can find one, right? Like, he got TKO'd by Chad Mendes in 2013, but, like, man, dude, like, it's just so crazy that, like, he's taking those punches, like you said, it's going to catch up to him. How is it not caught up to him at 37? Like, it shouldn't it have already caught up to him? It's got to be the tattoo.
It's got to be the damage tattoo. It's protecting him. He's kind of like the Iron Man with that the chest thing Iron Man has where he gets his power from. So he gets the power from the damage tattoo. And a very coherent post-fight interview, too. So it's not like he was rattled or anything either.
No.
Like, his brain was in shape. And Miner's, like, he's not going to make it much farther if he's submission or bust. Like, it's those days are long gone where he can get by with that.
When I thought, too, here's what I'll say about him. Is that, so I think he's a guy, if I'm not mistaken, he's one of those guys who changed to Glory MMA with James Krause. And since then...
Oh, a favorite gym, yes.
Yeah, one of my favorite. It doesn't top Fortis MMA. Or right now, sleeper pick for me, Daniel Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. Daniel Gracie Jiu-Jitsu is maybe number one right now. But like, when he went out and beat Charles Rosa... It was a really measured approach, and I'm not saying I'm buying stock in Derek Minner, because I think you're right. It's, a lot of it is like just submission or bust. But I will say that I think that measured approach against Charles Rosa is somewhat because Charles Rosa lets you fight a measured approach fight, and Darren Elkins lulls you into thinking you're going to knock him out, or you're gonna guillotine him, because he thought that a couple of times too, and like you don't finish Darren Elkins, and like his measured approach kind of went out the door because he felt like he was having success. And I don't know that that happens against a lot of people. Like, I think that's a pretty rare thing for Derek Minner.
All right. Let's just get to it, Dan. The future barber doesn't have to cut hair yet. She's still alive. She won a split decision over Miranda Maverick, which she didn't win. No one on God's green earth thinks that she won that fight. Other than Macy Barber, I think I may have been the point where someone in Slack asked me who chooses the judges. Does UFC or does the commission? Because that seemed to be like a UFC pick there, making Macy Barber win a fight she didn't win. But she claims she won, and she had her hand raised, so obviously she won. Yeah, this is a very This fight's very got me very angry because I used to like Macy Barber a bit, but yeah, her antics are far too annoying. She's not progressed at all. Plus, Miranda Maverick was my lock pick of the week, so that hurts also. What Barber is good at is she's tough, and she like she's tough, and that basically goes hand in hand that she can hang in there. She's got decent cardio. She's better as the fight goes on. Horrendous in the first round, but does she really have any skills in any other aspect? I couldn't tell you, and I don't know how she won the fight. I couldn't tell you what she did that was better than Miranda Maverick. I don't remember her doing
anything. She gives up her back better than Miranda Maverick.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
She lets people sink in their hooks better than Miranda Maverick.
What do you agree, basically toughness and durability basically are her two attributes, but I can't think of anything else really. And she's young, I guess.
So I would say this. I said this about her when she decided to make the move up to flyweight. So
right.
her first fight in the UFC and her fight on the Contender Series for that matter were both at strawweight.
Right.
And if you go back and watch that fight with Jamie Colleen and Hannah, I think she fought Hannah Cyphers first, if I'm not mistaken. She just kind of, like, manhandles them, right? Like, she uses raw physical strength in those two fights to just kind of take it to those women. And Hannah Cyphers and Jamie Colleen, not fighters who are particularly physically strong. And then you follow that up with she moved up to flyweight, and everybody was like, oh, I don't know if her physical strength is going to work out. And they gave her J.J. Aldrich, which, you know, no offense to J.J. Aldrich, but again, somebody who has fought a ton of times at strawweight, you know, went up to flyweight to fight Macy Barber. So that was her first fight up at Division II, not a particularly strong and imposing one. And then she fought Jillian Robertson, who is, while they like Jillian Robertson's sub game and even her wrestling to some extent, she kind of just like concedes takedowns all the time, right? Like she's cool being on the mat. So like that physicality came out in Barber, where she looked good again, right? Like, so the physicality played up in her first two fights at flyweight, and then she got badly out-wrestled by Roxanne Modafferi. Say what you want about the leg stuff, but, like, she was never going to deal with the strength of Roxy. And Roxy is not a super physically gifted. She's maybe the person who has done the most in any UFC career with the least physical gifts, right?
Definitely,
like, Roxanne Modafferi, by far. And not even just UFC, MMA careers. And she still had more physical than Macy. And I was like, oh, so this is what I've been expecting. Macy can't handle the physical nature of flyweight. And Alexa Grasso then took it to her, who's also a strawweight. Like, they kept giving her, like, and I think it played up with this Maverick fight, too. She likes to try to be a bully, and she's leaned on it so much in her career that it's, like, ingrained into her fight style. And it's not going to work at this weight class. Not unless she gets tons more muscle mass.
Yeah. I should say, I was surprised at how well she was doing clinching and grappling with someone as strong as Maverick. I was surprised by that. I thought she would have no hope whatsoever in that realm. And she probably won the fight based on people thinking that she did better than Maverick in that aspect.
But that's it's crazy because any
time crazy.
Yeah, anytime there's any offense for Maverick, the offense was like she actually takes her down, she took her back, she mounted her, and then like the offense for Macy Barber was like I had 72 seconds of clinch control with you, you're back against the cage, and you had 71 seconds. Like
the fact she actually got that though, I was surprised.
You're right.
You're
right. She did do a good job of that, but I think that a lot has to do with the fact that she was the one engaging it, like she was the one starting it. Like Maverick was fine to strike, and then like Barber was the one who like pushed forward enough that like they had to clinch, and that meant she engaged where her arms were in the clinch. She wound up with position. So I guess you're right. That is a technical aspect of her game, maybe that's worthy of noting. But like you're right. She. I mean, like unless you're pumped about her ability to throw a jab and a right hand from 12 feet away from somebody.
Oh, God. She really lunges, too.
There really isn't a lot to be excited about Macy Barber because, like, she's not very strong in any particular part of her game.
very sloppy. The striking is very like home run, trying to throw home run punches from 20 feet away. So why Coach Dillashaw told her to actually try to hit her, because it didn't look like she was trying to hit her. She was nowhere close. So she was basically booked. She basically booked as if she's on a winning streak by getting this Miranda Maverick fight. So where do they book her now? If they keep booking her up, she's going to get crushed, you'd think, because it's only going to get harder from here. But where do they book her from here now?
Man, I think and it's tough because I don't think she wins this fight at all. I think a lot of the women right in front of her body are in a bad way. You know, like she's already got, if you're looking at the UFC's rankings, you know, she's already got losses to number 90 and 10. So not higher than 9 and 10, right? You wouldn't jump her ahead of the people there. So, you know, if she couldn't beat 9 and she couldn't beat 10, why give her 8? And then the only two people in front of Miranda Maverick and ahead of her, if you want to keep her going up, are Talia Santos and Andrea Lee, who may be two of the stronger women in that division, not named fucking Miranda Maverick.
Do it.
Yeah, like, let's give her Talia.
Yeah,
Talia Santos.
Yeah, I have
Santos
her,
is a beast.
Is she a savage?
I think she'd be a savage.
I have in my performance rankings, they're basically in a dead heat, Talia Santos and Macy Barber. So that makes sense. Give her
She does have like 10 KOs in her career. Now, granted, they were all in like weird regional scenes in Brazil where she was probably fighting somebody who was like 1-1. But she's got back-to-back wins over Molly McCann and Jillian Robertson. So, like, she's worthy of being there. Like, and I think if you're bodying up Molly McCann and bodying up Jillian Robertson, bring on Macy Barber. I'd love to see her pound Macy Barber's face into the mat.
Yeah. And I hope they book Miranda Maverick. Like, well, I don't care, actually. It's actually probably good if they book her as if she lost, because there's no reason to. She's as young as Barber, so there's no reason to push her to the moon. I want to see her fed up to Valentina Shevchenko before she's actually ready for.
Do you know who she would be kind of fun to watch against? Is Montana De La Rosa. Who's got like a little bit of a wrestling background. And then it would be a step back from Barber, but like barely. Right? Like Montana De La Rosa's right there with her. For me, that would be a good. And again, like, I don't know if you know this. Like, Miranda Maverick has been really vocal about like, stop booking young women in the flyweight division against other young women. And that's 100% what a fight with Miranda Maverick or with Montana De La Rosa would be.
Yep.
But it would be fun stylistically, I guess. I'd also be all about just booking Miranda Maverick like she fucking won that fight. Like, put her in there with Jessica Ai and let her maul Jessica Ai.
Yes, that would be fun.
But if you want to give her a step back just because, give her a step back just because. I'll also say, of everybody who's ever been robbed, and she's right up there with some of the biggest robberies of all time.
Yeah,
she handles herself in one of the most mature ways of any fighter I've ever seen.
Yes, well, isn't she going for a PhD? So,
yeah, PhD fancy too.
Industrial. I know it's industrial psychology or something like that, I think.
Yes,
something like that. Yeah. So anyhow,
she's super smart.
Yep. Dumb enough to go on Dan's podcast, though, because she lost. So. All right, so we got that one wrong. Yeah, we haven't broken down. We've got all these fights wrong thus far, except for the plus 130 Darren Elkins. And then the opener of the main card we got wrong also. We almost had it right. I was getting very happy. But then the Greek Freak, Adrian Yanez, Antetokounmpo, knocked out Randy Costa after it. This is a crazy fight. So Dr. Pepper beat Peanut Butter Cups, but I don't know. Is there much more to say than this was a crazy fight and fun?
No, it was a lot. I will add one thing to your analysis other than it was a crazy fight and fun. Adrian Yanez was on the Top Turtle podcast that week.
Oh, yes, it's true. But Randy Costa has been on it also, right? So
In the past.
In the past. So, all right, so that's the main card. I went 1-4. Dan went 1-4. Yeah, does not doesn't seem to be our strong suit, does it? Like, this has become, well, last week it was. Last week everything was a strong suit, but more often than not, we get off the hot starts on the prelims, and then we tank in the main card. So I would, like I've suggested this before, we should just do a podcast where we just pick prelim fights, but then I caught myself, so that's a dumb idea. Who would ever listen to a podcast where all you do is break down prelim fights? Seriously, unless you have like someone amazing, a co-host in it, like once in a blue moon.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Is there any money in that? Is there any money, you think, in picking just prelim fights on a podcast? Probably not.
A little bit.
Maybe we should do that then. Anyhow, we sucked on the main card, but the night started off so well, which is the part we're gonna end this episode strong. Is the night started off strong for us on the prelims. First, let me tell you about a couple of our last sponsors. Underdog. Make sure you head over to underdogfantasy.com. Use promo code SGPN for free $25 to enter for a free shot at $1 million. They're running a million-dollar contest on there right now. And who couldn't use an extra milli? Even people who host prelim podcasts could use an extra $1 million here or there. So make sure you download the app and sign up at underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And while you're downloading apps, download the SGPN app. Yes, we have our own app, and it's live in the App Store and Google Play. It gives you access to all our picks, all our podcasts. You can get notifications when we drop our podcast or when any of the other SGPN podcasts drop. So make sure you grab that app. And when you're there, if you could give us a review, that would be amazing. Tell them how much you enjoy the MMA gambling podcast, especially, and how the hosts deserve a massive raise. All right, prelims. The happy part of the night for us, as per usual, Brendan Allen beat Puna Soriano. Oh, wait a minute. This isn't happy for Dan. Dan got this one wrong. Jeff got this one right. This was the only fight we differed on last night. Allen won three rounds, and two rounds on the judges' scorecards. This was not a robbery. This was a good fight, and Brendan Allen looked fantastic. Soriano is very tough. He got the snot beat out of him basically the whole fight and kept on coming.
Yeah, and he looked good in, like, little pieces and moments. But yep. I will just say the shocking thing to me here was I thought Puna gets this done on the feet, and if it hit the ground, Allen was going to win. And
right.
Allen looked great on with his hands.
He did.
I don't know how much of that – didn't they say – correct me if I'm wrong on the broadcast. Did they say he moved to Sanford MMA and, like, had left – training in wherever he was living in Louisiana, or, you know, he was training somewhere else.
That is, I'm checking his Wikipedia. Yep, that's where he is now. He's at Sanford.
Yeah, he moved to Sanford. So, like, maybe working with the guys at Sanford, maybe it just makes sense that he's this much better.
Yeah, Henry Hooft knows how to strike, so, yeah.
Yeah, he knows a thing or two.
Yeah, exactly. Let me see. We got the next one right also. This is a plus one, plus 120. Nasruddin Imavov, who is Dagestani, but he trains in France and speaks French. He knocked out TKO'd Ian Heinisch. Basically destroyed him, which was fun to see because we had a plus 120 on that one.
Yeah, I've been a pretty big fan. I think I said it last week, too. I've been a pretty big fan of Imavov. And he did it in exactly the way I thought he would. Like, Heinisch turned that pressure way up, and it just did not matter because this dude is a great counter striker. I mean, with the exception of losing a majority decision to Phil Hawes, which in retrospect, I mean, like, man, it does not look bad because Phil Hawes has looked like a killer since then. Like, he's looked really good in the UFC so far.
Yep. We need more French Dagestanis, I guess, right? That must be the new breed of fighter, French Dagestanis.
French Dagestanis. Yes. Yeah, you get all of Habib's wrestling and defensive wrestling and Francis's striking?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Speaking of striking, Mickey Gall can strike now. He pieced up Jordan Williams and then won via submission. Him winning via submission wasn't a shock, because that's where he thrives. Basically, that's the only thing he thrives at until his fight. But he won it basically based on his striking. The submission just came after he battered Jordan Williams, which was Dan's lock pick, which made me smile that Dan lost his lock. But I was going to come bite me in the ass soon with the Miranda Maverick fight. But yeah, if Mickey Gall can strike, then there might be hope for him still.
Yeah, I was. I mean, first of all, it's just a transformation that you can't expect, right? Like that's not anything that you can handicap. That he comes in like, first of all, not just can strike, but intends to. You know what I mean? Like, I think this level of striking has always existed within him, but he was always so one-track minded. Like, I'm gonna grapple you up, and like the striking was just there to defend himself against other people's striking. Him with intention is scary in a bunch of different ways. And I will say this. It's funny. Did you notice who was in his corner? Did you happen to see his walkout?
I did, but I'm trying to think who he had in his corner. I can't remember. Was it Matt?
Was it Matt Brown? It was Matt Brown.
Okay, yes, that's like, what I thought. Yes, yes.
That was a Matt fucking Brown looking at performance, was it not? Like, yep. It looked like Matt Brown straight up rubbed off on this kid. He had that, like, I'm going to push forward and punch you in the mouth, Matt Brown style, with his jiu-jitsu still being good. Because, like, his jiu-jitsu is always going to be his best attribute. Like, there's no doubt about that. So, like, for him to do that to Jordan Williams with his striking in that aggression, in that forward movement, like, hey, man, if he's training with Matt Brown, like, keep that up. Because that was a fun Mickey Gall to watch.
It was. There might be hope for the kid yet. And then we got nothing but winners. So, happy days. Julio Arce, TKO'd Andre Yule. We got that one right, minus 200. Eubanks destroyed Elise Reed in a round via TKO. And then from my hometown, Diana Bita. What's her first name again? You changed it.
Daniela?
Yes, right. Daniela.
But I changed it to Daniela.
Daniela Belbita beat Hannah Goldie via decision, 3 rounds to 0 on all the judges' scorecards. Anything to say about any of those fights?
No, I mean, I feel bad for Elise Reed, who fought Sajara Eubanks. She's fought at Atomweight before,
yep.
Which obviously the UFC doesn't have. But she was up 2 weight classes against somebody trying to come down a weight class after having a lot of trouble making flyweight in the past. So, like, she was badly outsized. And, like,
yep.
I just think, like, it's kind of a shame that the UFC, when they need short-notice opponents, find people out of the weight class because that makes it easier for them to make weight.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes some of the shine off of fighters like this because Elise Reed is really good. You know, we were talking about some of the wins she had before. I've seen her fight a bunch of times on CFFC. It's just a shame that, like, her debut now is always going to be that she had her eye socket broken in, like, 3 minutes because she was fighting in a terrible weight class for her against a huge monster who's... I mean, Sajara Eubanks has wins over Roxanne Modafari, has wins over, like, other top 10 women in the flyweight division, and this woman is coming up from atomweight to fight her. I get why they do it. I just hate that this is going to be, like, the first step into the UFC for so many fighters at this current pace.
Yeah, it's true. Because that was a squash match. She had no hope physically in that fight. It wasn't necessarily skill. Physically, she was totally outmatched in that fight. So almost like she was getting bullied in there. So that was... that fight card. A lot of finishes again. We had what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 11. So what's going on with that? All of a sudden we're getting a bunch of finishes. Used to be nonstop decisions. Now we're getting finishes. Is the booking getting weak or what's going on, Dan? Break it down.
Nah, I don't know necessarily other than chance, and I would assume regression back to the mean because the booking of this past weekend was really good. I mean, like, I think somebody said there were only 3 favorites who won on the whole card, so which is part of why our numbers were down is because we don't predict, you know, 9 underdogs to win any given week. But, like, the underdogs had a great week, so, like, it's not even that it was bad booking because the people who were supposed to win didn't, so... I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, was there that many underdogs, really? I know we hit on a few, but...
If I'm looking at this right now, and I'll just read them off to you, is that, so, Dillashaw was a fight night underdog. Raulon Paiva was an underdog. Darren Elkins was an underdog. Macy Barber was an underdog. Yanez was not. So that's 4 out of 5 on the main card.
It's wild.
And then I think Brendan Allen and Puna was a pick'em maybe.
Yeah, it was very close. Yeah.
It was very close. Imavov was an underdog, and Nicky Gall was an underdog.
Yes,
so the three first, and the Belbita Goldie fight was also probably a pick 'em. Damn near close to it.
Yep.
So that leaves you with pretty much just Yanez, Arce, and Eubanks as like clear favorites that won. So, kind of surprising that there was so few of them.
No kidding. All right, so that puts that one to bed. As we were talking about earlier on, we got another card obviously coming up this week, UFC and ESPN again, Hall versus Strickland. So it'll be UFC Vegas 33, I guess we're up to now. It's from the UFC Apex once again. It's coming Saturday on ESPN. This is going to be a struggle. This is on both the main card and the prelims are on ESPN. And this is, I'll tell you what the co-main event is. Shamil Abdurakhimov versus Chris Daukaus. That's your co-main event. You may be struggling a little bit.
Two top 10 heavyweights?
Fine.
Usually we have unranked heavyweights in the co-main event, dude, right? Like, usually it's Greg Hardy and Tai Tuivasa. Oh, that wasn't a co-main event, but it was close.
Yeah,
like,
at least it's...
Usually we have...
It's named fighters at least. No one knows these people. That's the thing. Uriah Hall, Sean Strickland is main event, which should be fun. Is there a fight or two that jump off his card that you are most excited about?
Yeah, I think if I'm picking the first one, Ronnie Lawrence versus Trevin Jones should be really freaking fun. Both of those guys are crazy underrated in the bantamweight division. I think people sleep on just how good Trevin Jones has been since he got to the UFC. Of course, he had one of his wins vacated due to, I think, taking a fight on 2 days' notice and having weed in his system, which now wouldn't even make him lose that fight. But he beat Timur Valiev. He knocked him out. And then he got Mario Bautista, Mario Bautista was on a crazy good run of his own. He just knocked out Miles John. So, I'm on Trevin Jones, and he's fighting, like I said, Ronnie Lawrence, who... not that Dana White word should be your bond, but he compared him to like a young GSP when he was on Contender Series. He looked really good on Contender Series against Jose Johnson. Of course, won his first UFC fight. That one is pretty damn fun. I'm also kind of excited for Kyung Ho Kang versus Hani Yaya, mostly because I love Hani Yaya and like. Kyung Ho Kang can wrestle a little bit, and I don't know that that's a good thing when you're fighting Hani Yaya, because like sometimes it'd just be better to never wrestle ever. And I have no idea how that's gonna go. That's fun as hell. There's a couple other ones. Rafa Garcia coming back's fun. We got some chunky guys. Brian Bam Bam Barbarina is coming back from having 2 liters of blood in his stomach, so that's cool. Love a Sam Alvey fight? Love a Sam Alvey fight?
Yeah, it's true, but it's weak on star power. You have to give me that at least, right?
There's a former champ in there.
Is there? Let me see who we have. It's a former UFC champ. Oh, Nico Montana. Oh, Dan. Hey, yeah, Ashley Yoder, the Spider Monkey. One of her favorites is in it too. Against the Kangaroo, Jinyu Fry.
I'm gonna tip my hand in there. She ain't gonna be Jinyu Fry.
Yeah, I like both of them, so that's fine. But yeah,
Jinyu Fry looked really good last time out. So yep. I'm in on Jinyu Fry.
So which means Ashley Yoder is gonna be on the Top Turner podcast this week, right?
No, this week, I'll let you know who's going to be on this week. This week, I'm talking with Brian Barbarina.
Don't pick him.
About the aforementioned, I think he had said he had 4 liters of blood in his stomach cavity due to two busted arteries.
So that's not normal?
It's not normal.
I don't know what I have in my stomach, so okay.
It was open, like it was just pouring into his stomach cavity. Yeah, it was like not supposed to be there.
No, it doesn't sound like it should, yeah.
And then he said he was it's a wild story. You definitely have to listen into the whole thing because he tells the whole thing. But he talks about driving home to Tennessee from his gym, and he just went blind, because that's apparently how your body reacts to that happening. And he just went blind and had to try to pull over with no vision. Really crazy shit. So, yeah, Brian Barberena, and then also I talked to Colin Anglin, who is making his featherweight debut after some long time off on the Contender Series, and he's fighting a name that I just want Jeff to say.
Melstick Bagdasarian.
Bagdasarian.
Bagdasarian. Ooh, I'm the expert.
You're pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, this is
But yeah, I talked to Colin Anglin. Yeah, Bogdazarian's good. Grootsmacher is really great. I mean, Abdurakhimov is good. Zaruk Adashev.
Yep.
Like, those names are all
How about Kosuke? Orion Kosuke?
I think Orion, it's Kosuke.
See, there you
Kosuke?
Go.
Orion, like the stars.
Munir Laziz, Nicholas Stolze, Roman Kopolev.
Stolze. I talked to Nicholas Stolze, so make sure you pick more Neil Lazette.
Yes, exactly. All right.
He's called Green Mask, Nicholas the Green Mask Stolze.
Wow, there you go. Of course he is. Cheyenne Bice, yeah. So, yeah, it's for the nerds. This it's on Maine. This is not a Maine ESPN fight card. That's for darn sure. It doesn't mean it's not going to be fun. It doesn't mean there isn't a chance to win a whole bunch of money, because a lot of times you can do better on the, like we did amazing on the fight card 2 weeks ago, which was not as good as last week's fight card. So the quality of the card does not have anything to do with how much money you can make. So, all right, let's put this to bed. Thank you for listening, everyone. Make sure you subscribe, like I said, to our MMA Gambling Podcast feed. Read our stuff at MMA-manifesto.com and at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. You can listen to Dan's podcast when they drop later this week, Top Turtle Podcast and the Prelim Primer. And then we'll be back on Wednesday night picking this fight card that we basically just broke down for you right here. But we'll actually pick winners for every fight. And Dan basically guarantees he's not going to let me overtake him in the money lead this year. So we'll have to see how that goes. You want to take us home, Dan, or is there anything else I should tell the peeps?
No, I mean, like, knowing that I guarantee that at the end of the year that I will be ahead of you in the money, that was all really they needed to know.
Yep. Okay, go ahead. Take us home. It's your turn.
All right. I'm Daniel Gumby Freeland. He is Juicy Jeff Fox, and we'll catch you next week.
No, we won't. We'll catch you on Wednesday. God, Dan.
We'll catch you Wednesday.
We'll catch you Wednesday. Bye.